I guess, and I know there are companies experimenting with new models, and I'm curious to hear what you see in the field. What is working? What are the new models that are emerging, and maybe some maybe already preliminary results that you can share with us?
So the new models do look suspiciously like venture capital funding. There are even some terms that have been are now being bandied about, like funding by stage gate, which is frankly not my favorite term. I prefer the term scale gate, because in stage gates you typically flow in one direction through them and you cannot go back or repeat to the stage. Whereas for a startup, perhaps you get a little bit of evidence and pivot, and then you need to kind of go back to that friends and family round and get more evidence. So it should be at a certain scale, you need more evidence in order to get more funding, but you can repeat in the same stage at the same scale as often as you want. The new term, of course, that is Eric Ries is popularizing is metered funding. So that, I think, is increasingly common. It's just having some form of criteria that, you know, can be a little bit flexible, but some criteria for if a startup is requesting more than $500,000 worth of time and or funding, what are the criteria? And, you know, GE is openly talking about this sort of thing. Intuit has rules in place for this sort of thing. The results of which, frankly, I don't think anybody's going to give us very clear data on anytime soon. But I can personally say from what I've observed, I am always pleasantly surprised when projects shut down. That's to me always a good sign. That's perhaps the best sign, is if a project that would normally have gotten $1 million, $10 million worth of funding is actually shut down in 3 months because it's a terrible idea. That to me is a huge indicator of progress, because it tells me we're not wasting our cash on that. And with the $900,000 or $9 million that we just saved, we can now invest in 10 or 100 other ideas that might be a little bit more profitable. So it is a little strange, but the best evidence that this type of funding is working is actually that we're shutting down projects more often. Although perhaps the one thing I would add is that we do need to be a little bit careful of false negatives here. So it's not sufficient just to say like, oh yay, I just shut down, 9 out of 10 of my projects. We don't necessarily want to just shut things down and start celebrating that we shut something down, and that in and of itself is purely a success. There has to be evidence to back that up. And we want to have a very nice balance of projects that are succeeding and projects that are getting canceled. Neither too many succeeding, as Reed Hastings said, he was disappointed that so many Netflix shows were succeeding because it meant they weren't trying risky enough things, but also not simply just shutting things down arbitrarily. We're looking for evidence on both sides.
So you mentioned evidence a couple of times, and it's of course crucial to the whole thinking supporting this. But how would you, as an innovation program manager, how would you link evidence to the funding that you need?
So how would we link evidence? So the type of evidence that we'd of course love to have is some statistically significant sample size on a very large project. But that's not really how we can operate as entrepreneurs or intrapreneurs. We need to kind of have gradually increasing levels of confidence in a concept or a hypothesis or assumption or whatever you prefer to phrase it as. We always want to get a little bit of evidence, even if that's just 20 people signing up for a product out of 100. Okay. Your margin of error is plus or minus 4%. It's a very big margin of error, but 20%, well, plus or minus 4%, still worst case scenario, maybe 16%. It's great. Not bad. Now, I don't know that it's a good idea, but I know that it's worth investing another 200 people into this funnel. Okay? I can invest a little bit more money. Okay? Then once I have a 15% conversion rate on 1,000 people, now I know, okay, well, it's looking a little better. I still don't know if it's going to scale to 1 million or 1 billion people, but it's certainly worth investing enough time and money to scale that with 10,000 people or 100,000 people and then 1 million people. So what we're looking for is gradually accumulating evidence that gives us confidence. That's really all we're talking about. And that evidence can take the form of quantitative studies. It can take the form of qualitative studies. It should ideally take a mixture of both. It should have some good user research, looking at the customer, seeing them smile, seeing them excited about the product, but also seeing clicks on a button, seeing actual retention results, seeing that 50% of our users are still using this product 3 months from now. And that goes for internal innovation projects as well. If you are putting out a financial report that's been requested by the C-suite, and there's 10 members of that C-suite, I would love to be submitting that report via a Bitly link where I could actually click and see how many people are actually downloading that report. Or better yet, even put it on a web page, look at the Google Analytics and see, well, is anybody actually reading it? Because if I'm spending 4 hours a week compiling that report, I would like to be certain that somebody is bothering to read it. Otherwise, I could save my time and use that doing something else. So this applies for internal innovation projects as well, no matter how small we might think they are. We don't want to be wasting our time.
So there's a lot of talk as well around return on learning, right? So what is the cost and what is the return on learning? Can you zoom in on that a little bit?
What is the cost and what is the return on learning? I think the way that I like to think about it, and I will credit conversations with David Benetti for helping me think in this manner. I like to look at the value of information as very much in line with options theory. So when we buy health insurance in the United States, recognizing that many people watching this video may not have to buy health insurance, so you can think of life insurance instead. We can talk about that since not everybody has our wonderful US healthcare system. If you have to buy the life insurance, what we're purchasing is we're not hoping to use our life insurance. Like, nobody wants to use their life insurance. That is a bad thing. Nobody wants to cash in on that policy. What we're purchasing when we purchase life insurance is not just peace of mind, but we're purchasing the option. Right? We're purchasing an option to provide for our families once we are gone. When we buy health insurance, we're purchasing the option to go to a doctor. It's not that we want to break a leg and go to the doctor, but we'd like to have the option, right? That option is essentially information. It allows us to defer a decision until we have gathered more information, and then we can excise that option, right? So when we talk about, like, well, we've learned something, like, are we actually going to exercise that? No, sometimes we're not. We might invest in a project in an adjacent market and say, hey, look, turns out that there is an adjacent market. It looks like there might be a good idea there that might be a disruption, but you know what? It's not going to disrupt us. And it's not a market that we have a core competency in. We can't provide the value here. So maybe let's actually not go there. What we purchased there was the information to know that we shouldn't invest a lot of money in that area. Or perhaps we purchased the information to let us know that we have the option of entering this new disruptive market. We're purchasing and buying the information so we can make better decisions, just like buying a Gartner research report. Although I would like to think that some of the experiments that we're doing are actually more direct knowledge than a Gartner research report, better than just purchasing a survey, for sure. Not to put down Gartner. I know everybody from Gartner is now going to be mad at me. Just the first company that came to the top of my mind, folks. Anyway, so we're just purchasing information. It doesn't really matter if we exercise that option or not. The information itself has value. So whether or not we choose to exercise that value is up to us, but it has to be information that would allow us to make rational decisions as to whether or not to enter markets or not enter markets.
You mentioned companies like GE and Intuit, and I also said that you don't have, like, full details on how they're doing it, but any more details that you can share with us?
So it's very difficult because I am always under a very lengthy legal contract with anybody that I work with directly. So it's actually a lot easier for me to talk about other companies that I don't work with directly. Look, I think the thing that's probably in the news most is that GE stock actually just took a huge hit because they missed their quarterly earnings report. I don't think that that's actually That's not necessarily evidence that their approach of funding new projects or that their move into design thinking and lean startup is bad. But it does tell us that it's not a short-term play. Okay? And nobody was expecting that. Most investments, you know, take years to pay off. While it's delightful that Instagram got purchased by Facebook so rapidly, it's awesome that the folks who did TBH got purchased, I think, within 6 months. That's phenomenal, okay? But most innovative projects don't work like that. It will typically take years and years and years, especially if it's an older industry where perhaps it takes 4 years to construct a project such as an oil tanker or a large-scale machine. Now, again, the results of that I don't think are going to be seen in the immediate financial statement. The results of that should really be measured in number one, the long-term effects. Okay, of course, that's a lagging indicator, but we should be looking at the effects 5-10 years from now. Lean startup design thinking, these things are not being applied and measured, frankly, by academia quite yet. I think they're starting to. It's going to take a very long time to find us that information. So let's look more directly at what is the cost to innovate. Okay? That's very, very clear. If we can reduce the cost to innovate and we can get the same information that a project used to take $1 million to do, and we can get the same amount of information that, wow, that is a bad idea or that is a good idea within 1 month, and we can reduce that cost to $100,000, that is a clear ROI. If we shut the project down, we have just saved $900,000. If we reduce the cost to innovation by a factor of 10, then we can use the same budget to invest in 10 different concepts, basically purchasing research reports for a tenth of the price. So why do we even need to look further than that? That's an immediate ROI in terms of buying information. And there's nobody at a large company who's going to tell you that information is not valid. And yes, we never buy research reports, that's a waste of time. We just like to guess at things and throw darts at the wall. So we never have that argument in regards to research or information. So why are we having that argument with regards to, like, is it worth doing this stuff? What are the real results here? It's just a very funny conversation.
There's this, let's say, habit that, in some companies, let's not stereotype, but if you spend less budget this year, then okay, next year you need less budget, right? So basically, you are kind of punished for spending less money. So how would you then at least frame the conversation if you are successful in bringing down the cost of your innovation? The argument could be, well, that you don't need that much of money for your innovation, but of course, that's completely counterintuitive, right? That's the traditional way of thinking.
That is a little bit funny. Companies do work like that. If you don't spend the money, you don't get the money next year. I do think that it would be more appropriate to take the money saved from basic operations and invest it into kind of a mini venture capital fund from that business unit or perhaps the company as a whole. I mean, there's a few random things that are strange there. I mean, firstly, if we invest in sort of innovation infrastructure, okay, that is going to lower the cost of innovation, well, hopefully that will lower the cost of innovation across our business lines. Okay, so we shouldn't be penalizing one business unit for that. When I talk about innovation infrastructure, the most basic example would be like, hey, if we purchase a 3D printer, we will be able to prototype faster. That lowers the cost of innovation. Very simple. Okay. Clear capital expenditure that has an ROI in terms of lowering the cost of innovation. It will take us less time and less money to produce things. If we invest in something a little bit more sophisticated, like design thinking training, agile techniques, okay, this is an education process, but we can still measure it in almost the same way. Like, are we able to prototype faster? Are we able to achieve a certain amount of learnings faster and thus reduce the cost? That's, again, it's a clear win. We are purchasing some sort of product or service that should lower the cost of innovation. And so it should have a clear ROI as long as we actually measure the cost of innovation. So step one for me is we should actually measure our cost of innovation. And this seems like the same step, honestly, to me. But step two, we should actually include the human cost in the cost of innovation. Because I don't know how many projects I've looked at where folks will tell me, oh, yes, we give every team $2,000 and $2,000 is the budget or $10,000 is the budget and we're being very lean and scrappy. Well, yeah, that's great. But you also gave them 6 months of time and a team of 10 people. Like, does that cost $10,000? Are these folks working for free? And no, it's a budget of $500,000, which is a very large kind of friends and family round. So as long as we start counting the cost of innovation in terms of time and money, we can actually start looking at what the return is immediately as a leading indicator, I think.